It is time for the Fan Club here on a Friday. Cody and Gold, 96.5 The Fan, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Yes, we will get back to Drew's hair. It is done. You probably saw the video by now. If you haven't, we'll get it back on video. Drew looks slightly like Joe Burrow slash Andy Dalton slash Machine Gun Kelly slash Eminem slash a bunch of people.
It's a good mix.
It is bright. Bink in studio with us. We'll talk about your new show in a second. What do you make of the hairstyle?
I'm glad he's married. Let me put it like the single
so
scene.
So am I, Bink. So am I.
It would not work. It would not work. It really wouldn't.
Couldn't you explain, though? I got it done for my radio show. I'm a fun guy.
Honestly, he looks terrible. I can't believe he did that to him. I mean, he really does. I mean, let's be honest. Drew looks like crap.
I just think he looks like a fit. He looks like your annoying 15-year-old like son.
And he's wearing that Burrow shirt, which is like a clown wearing those big shoes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the additional thing. Bink, what do you want to drink? I've got a Four Hands IPA. I have a couple of seltzers, which I know aren't your thing. I brought you one of the garage beers, which we had last week. But then I also was given some of the lime versions.
Oh, there you go.
I'm not even going to ask. I feel like I deserve
Kelsey
a seltzer.
Kelsey Brother Lime Beers.
Yes. Let Drew pick first.
I feel like I deserve a seltzer.
All right, Drew, do you want a cork or do you want a
garage beer? I do want to try the garage
Simply
beer.
Limeade.
Well, we'll do a cork today. Okay. I'll be in there.
Give Drew a Pepsi.
I brought him seltzer.
Mom, meatloaf.
One of these days, I'll buy him some cider. Do you want to try the lime one?
Sure, why not? Thanks.
I haven't tried this garage beer yet.
It tastes, well, I'll let you taste it, and I'll tell you what I think, see if you agree with me.
2 weeks in a row. This time we can try the lime. Somebody brought it over for poker because we were talking about
it. I can't even take him seriously. He just ran in the studio.
He would get carded at every liquor store in America.
He looks
like twice. They'd say this is a fake.
I don't even think you could buy chew without being carded.
He looks like he's 16.
I don't even think you buy a lottery ticket.
Yeah, I mean, it's unreal. It really is.
Anyway. I figure, you know, if we tried the regular, we should try the lime.
Yeah,
no. But we couldn't try the lime until we tried
it's the actually really good. This is like once you mow the lawn or being outside, like this is a highly
I like the lime better than the original. The original just tastes like more light, which is fine.
Yeah, I like this one too.
This is very smooth. You're outside, you're sitting on the patio or whatever.
It's a garage beer. That's what it's called.
Highly crushable. You can drink many of these.
That's what you're looking for sometimes in a beer.
I wanted to get to a couple things that happened during the break though on the Chiefs front. We learned from Andy Reid while we were in break that Kareem Hunt not going to be active. I don't think that should be that surprising. What is surprising, Andy Reid said, guys, they are going to rotate. As of right now,
hate it.
Kingsley, Suamatia, and Wanya Morris at left tackle. That is, just let's call it like it is, that's not a normal thing NFL teams do. Certainly not an NFL team that's going for a three-peat.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the philosophy of rotating two quarterbacks in college football.
Then you don't have a left tackle. Yeah.
You actually don't have a guy. I think you have to get better in the flow of games. We saw Wanya last year play four games, and sometimes when Wanya came in, he played well sometimes, but he'd give up a sack, you know, left and right because he came in cold coming into the game. So I think it's always better to kind of stick with one guy in that situation. Although teams look on tape and film and see what happens. And what the Bengals did, obviously Trey Hendrickson was having his way with Kingsley, but there were times they'd move Hubbard from the other side, Sam Hubbard, to the same side as Hendrickson. So now he had like two of those guys to combat with.
I honestly try to think of an example because somebody suggested this. Can anyone think of an example of a team going into a game and pretending like they were going to rotate left tackle in an NFL game?
No.
That's what I'm
wondering, Bink. Is this what he's saying publicly?
Yeah.
And then let's say it's Kingsley starts the game.
Yeah.
And we never see Wanya unless it's really, really bad.
Like the starters are going to play the whole first half of the preseason. It doesn't happen.
Because, I mean, honestly, what are you getting? So first drive of the game, it's Kingsley. He's okay. So you leave him out there or like, no, we're rotating. So Wanya's in the next drive. Or is it truly rotating? Hey, if there is a string of snaps where we feel like they're getting the best of Kingsley, then we're going to go to Wanya. So then you're not going back to him then if that's to me, the minute you switch from Kingsley to Wanya, you're not going back. Because why would you go back at that point? If Kingsley struggles
without an injury,
then you go back to Wanya, then you're going to go back to Kingsley. It makes no sense.
You have to be careful what plays you call, too. When you have certain guys in the game, like if you're running more when you put Wanya Morris in, or you're running more when you have Kingsley playing. I just think keeping consistency, I always think, is kind of the best way to do it. You got to do it. I mean, Kingsley, OTAs was Wanya, but as soon as they put pads on at St. Joe, it's all been Kingsley. But You know, you got to be able to protect Mahomes. I mean, that's the bottom line. Now, there's other ways to do that. Obviously, they're keeping all the tight ends on the roster. There's that. There's chipping them with the running back like Carson Steele. And then we saw Leo Chanel from defense in the backfield a little bit last time.
Do you think there'll be a – hey, we're gonna give some help to Kingsley. We'll chip. But hey, it gets to a point where we need to go down the field. We need to have more receivers available. We don't have time to leave Kelsey in because we need him out in his route quicker. That they sub in Wanye on that like that instance. There's a couple plays in the game where they feel
it's
like they need to have.
And we know that someone's coming.
I think something that you don't want to do, but you could do. Joe Tooney goes to the left and Wanye.
People have been saying that for years.
I know that. His arms are small. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm geek out about the combine and arm length and stuff like that. He's a guard prototype, but he can play tackle.
I know. We heard that a year or two ago, though, and they obviously don't agree with that.
Because the last thing you want him to do is have to go into the 2025 draft.
For sure.
Having to get another offensive lineman.
By the way, no offense, already feel that way. They already have to, like, I already feel like they need a tackle in the 2025
offensive line. They're going to have to address wide receiver again.
Well, and Juwan might only be here another year. Like, for me now, it's like, Juwan might only be there for another year. If Kingsley can't stick at left tackle, well, that's no big deal. Maybe he could stick at right tackle. Like, I got to think they're already not putting those wheels in motion, but they got to be thinking that's at least a possibility in the upcoming draft again.
It could be, but let's also remember, guys, it's week three of the season.
Sure.
There is so much time for Kingsley or Wanye, I guess, all of a sudden, for either one of those guys to improve and show that they can be a legit starting left tackle in this league. I don't think it's now like, okay, well, they just don't have a tackle all year. Right now, you're right. They do not have a left tackle right now.
At this point of the season, you really hope going through camp and everything, you had identified.
This is not ideal. You don't have a, you know, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one thing. Same thing applies here, left tackle.
Kingsley's seen great pass rushers in St. Joe, you know, with George Karloftis and Mike Dana and these guys coming at him, and Chris Jones dealing with those guys. You would think that would have prepared him for this point. It's not a situation we would be dealing with when you're losing a receiver and a running back for the season.
It's going to make – so this whole offseason we talked about like, oh, man, I can't wait. The return of the deep passing game. Here we go, everybody. This is the thing we're not talking about it. Because if you can't protect Mahomes long enough, well, then that's gone. I don't care if the weapons are better. I don't care if they're better at getting deep. The whole Patrick Mahomes is going to get to air it out deep downfield stuff. That's not going to happen if they don't protect Patrick Mahomes. That's a league-wide thing, but that would certainly impact the Chiefs in this scenario where, you know, as much as we might have hoped, he got to fling it out 55 yards in Atlanta like he did to Tyreek Hill in a preseason game.
And that hurts your running game because safeties creep
it does.
Up.
Right.
It hurts the whole offense.
Although I still think that they're going to dare the Chiefs to run. The absence of Isaiah Pacheco and the way the league's been doing it anyway, Bank, I think they're just going to have like 6 men in, 5 men in the box the entire time, and they're going to dare the Chiefs to run with Carson Steele.
Now, this goes to your point about, hey, long-term, do they have an answer? And we're going to find out through the next 15 weeks or whatever. If it got to a point where it was really, really bad, I see people on the text line mentioning Donovan Smith. That is your break glass in case of emergency. We don't even know if he wants to play. That is if it gets really, really ugly. We're not there yet. It's 2 weeks into the season. But this is a huge week. This is a huge week to decide whether or not, in my opinion, Kingsley can still be that answer.
I mean, him taking over that job, being a rookie, usually, you know, Andy Reid will play rookies. Obviously, you saw Creed and Trey Smith and stuff like that. But left tackle is one of those key positions. You see what happens to backup quarterback. It's always the journeyman guys like a Carson Wentz or Nick Foles. It's some Chad Henne, a Matt Moore. Left tackle, I mean, you're protecting a $500 million investment back there.
I know, but they've put all kinds of left tackles, man. Like, I mean, we talked about this. If it doesn't really matter. If it's Wanye or Kingsley and they make it to the Super Bowl again this year, that'd be the fifth different left tackle Mahomes has entered a Super Bowl with. That's nuts. So that does, I'll say, sometimes you can have like a little more confidence if you're like, history suggests to me that this won't be as bad as we're making it feel right now. I just hate going into a left tackle position being like, look, if you're not sure who your number one running back is and you're like, they'll share the time, so what? Or we're going to let our defensive ends share time, so what? Or corners they did that with at the beginning of the year, so what? Left tackle's not really the one. I want Patrick Mahomes guessing which guy's doing what up there, which guy does what better with what. And my guess is that Wanye's better in straight pass. I feel like they're going to tip their hand. I think Wanye's better in straight dropback passing situations. And then when they want to get out and pull a tackle bink or run a screen, those are more likely with Kingsley. You're almost Kingsley's telling the defense what you might be more likely to do here.
Although Wanya showed off that athleticism with that catch in the end zone, huh?
Yeah, he did. He did.
You like a big man touchdown, Bink?
I love those.
I go back to what you said a few minutes ago, though. Like, there's still part of me that's very skeptical that thinks, all right, whoever actually starts the game is ultimately going to play 95% of the snaps still, if not 100%.
I just think the whole mindset is you have Patrick Mahomes. This team will never have a quarterback this good again, ever.
Right.
So as long as you got that, and you look at, you know, his number one receivers out in Hollywood Brown, now you're dealing with this left tackle. It's like, That's priority number one, is get things set for number 15, because you're never going to have this opportunity.
Yeah, I just don't believe after 2 weeks that an organization that has been as smart as they have been during this dynasty, an organization that their head coach has offensive line ties, right? And Andy Heck is one of the better offensive line coach. I find it hard to believe that after 2 weeks, like, oh, shoot, we completely misevaluated. We don't buy a left tackle. I don't buy that.
Trey Henderson, you know, had a great
game. If they thought that neither one of these guys could eventually be the guy, they would have signed Donovan Smith or somebody else. I do have faith that it's not as bad as maybe it seems. It is unusual. I'll give you that. It is unusual that 3 weeks into the season, you have a head coach saying, on a Friday press conference at least, we're going to rotate our left tackles going into the game. That's not normal. That is stunning. But I don't think it's doomsday, because if it was, I just think they would have noticed the doomsday scenario during training camp or offseason stuff.
Probably. But boy, you know it is. Not till you get in live games. They got in a live game and they were like, whoo.
Trey Hendrickson, give him credit. He played a hell of a game.
I just kind of thought it was going to be what it normally is in a bench spot. I thought they were going to bench him, and then they were going to be like, oh, it's fine. Just in that moment,
only time you're truly tested. I mean, you can go through preseason and all that, or training camp, but the true test is when you're actually playing competition.
Yeah.
So. Yes, Andy Reid's a former offensive line coach. They'll get this thing right. Andy will get it right. And Kingsley, you know, will take the heart and try to fix things, hopefully, at some point.
This is where I will...
There's got a lot of potential.
I will, like you said, Bank, I'll trust the Hall of Fame NFL head coach. Because the argument of, well, if you leave him in there, it's going to ruin his confidence. If the choices were, like, let's just say if I were in that situation, it's like, well, we're going to ruin Cody's radio confidence if we just let him struggle for 4 hours, or we're going to pull his ass off the air. I can tell you which one would make me feel worse, getting pulled off the air. Now, in a football situation, it might be a little bit different, and Andy certainly has a vibe for what his team is in for, but it feels like both run that same risk, don't they? Pulling a guy off the field, or... letting in there to get his ass kicked, seems like both have a chance to ruin his confidence.
There's a little bit of pressure with these rookies, because again, when you're drafted by the Chiefs, this is back-to-back Super Bowl champions, a team that's gone to 6 straight AFC title games. There's no training wheels. Like, you're drafted by the Carolina Panthers, they'll give you a break. You know you're going to get a break because the team sucks. But you come with the Chiefs, there comes some pressure with being a starting member of the Kansas City Chiefs protecting a 2-time MVP.
We got Jay Binkley hanging out with us, the fan club here on a Friday. Brand new Chiefs hat. Looks like a brand new hat, man. I like it. New lat.
It's a couple weeks old, yeah.
That's a couple weeks?
Yeah.
You got a new show here on 96.5 The Fan, too, last night.
Yeah, Buffalo Wild Wings, the fans football show. We do it each and every week. Mitch Schwartz and I go out to a different Buffalo Wild Wings. We did 152 first week. Last week's out in Belton. This week, Zona Rosa.
Zona Rosa?
Oh, that's cool. So we're at Zona Rosa.
Not terribly far from me.
I think we're doing all of them, too, because we're doing all the ones in Overland Park, St. Joe. We're even going up to St.
Joe.
And there's a Chiefs ambassador each week for us. Danon Hughes was out there with this week one, which is great to get his insight on the wide receivers. And clearly, Mitch is perfect for talking about the tackle situation, which we did last night. Then last night was J.C. Pearson. So we talked, obviously, a lot of defensive backs with him. Then we kind of looked at
it. You guys could reminisce about the old days, you and J.C.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, J.C., partners back in the day. But, no, it's great. And people go out there, Mitch, and Mitch is always great. He'll talk to anybody and talk football with them or whatever. That's the goal. Come in there, drink the $5 Bud Lights, 20 ounces, and buy one, get one free wings, and talk to Mitch and the ambassador and have a great time.
We'll get back into the Chiefs in just a second. Also want to get into college football, Bank, all three local schools. But for a second, we were talking about Thursday Night Football. What did you take away from the Jets' win against the Patriots? Aaron Rodgers looked great, but it was against the Patriots. Where are you at on them in his recovery? Because he looks way better than Kirk Cousins has so far.
Yeah, he looked great. I thought Aaron Rodgers, I mean, spot on his throws. But it is the Patriots. Patriots did beat the Bengals.
I mean, I know. Can you believe that?
How bad of a loss is that, by the way?
That was pretty bad. I didn't expect that. But it's still an NFL team. It's going to be competitive. I still think this is the Buffalo Bills division at this point. I think Miami, even with Tua going this year, I didn't like the Miami Dolphins' chances. They come back. I think the New York Jets flirt with that team can be a relative team in the AFC East, but it all depends on Aaron Rodgers. Without Aaron Rodgers, they're nothing.
He made a couple of Aaron Rodgers throws last night, though.
That. Many teams like that.
Their defense, I think, is actually a bigger problem at this point.
Yeah, and Mike Williams, the former Charger, looked pretty good with the Jets last night. I mean, he's still coming off an injury and stuff like that, but he showed that he could be pretty deadly for him.
I think that he made some Aaron Rodgers throws, some ones I'm used to for a future Hall of Famer. The off-balance, off-platform throw to Garrett Wilson is probably the best example of that, but he moved, he ran a little bit, took a couple shots. Better than I thought he would look in the first couple of weeks, I'll say. But he's got to do it more than once. He's 40, recovering from a serious injury, and he might have been able to run and take the hits in game one, but can he do it game 5, 6, 7, 8? It's kind of like the Miami thing. I'm going to need to see you later in the season and not wilting before I'm ready to just be like, they're back. Or, I don't know if the Jets were ever here, but they're back in some capacity, at least in there. But I thought Aaron Rodgers, that's as good as I've seen him look. I know, I wouldn't, Salah's I think he's a good coach. I don't have any real issue there.
He's
that
still
helps.
A question mark for me.
I said he's good.
Cool. Yeah. AFC's loaded with the quarterbacks, and if Rodgers can continue this, I mean, you look at the quality quarterbacks in this conference.
Oh, there's a slight discrepancy between the AFC and the NFC still.
Oh, yeah.
And by slight, I mean significant.
Especially if Stafford
ends up being traded
over
there. Are you buying at all what we've seen in the AFC West from the Chargers? 2-0, they haven't played anybody yet.
They haven't. I am buying into that running game, though. J.K. Dobbins is having that resurgence type of year. And he was a guy that visited the Chiefs 2 weeks later. He signs with the Chargers. He signed a one-year, $1.6 million deal. I mean, that's slightly more than Jerick McKinnon when he was signing those one-year deals with the Chiefs. As long as he can stay healthy, the Harbert hadn't had to do anything. Because Jim Harbaugh runs the football all the time. He did it at Michigan. Michigan can't even run now that Harbaugh's gone. But they run the football a lot. If they can continue that, and they've been getting production at the wide receiver too, I'm not buying they're ready to win this division. Can they compete in the AFC for a wild card spot? I think so.
I want to see him for like two more games.
Well, the Chiefs are going to see him next week.
Yep. That's why I said two more. They're getting the Steelers this week. Now, Justin Herbert, he did have, I don't know if you saw that tape job he had today.
Yeah, I don't think he's 100% healthy.
He's definitely not, but like thick tape job on the ankle today. So all the reports are that he's determined to play. This is the time sometimes where they like let quarterbacks play in a situation where it's like, it's week 3, Justin. Turns out we're going to need you more next week or week 15 or in the playoffs. Mahomes, with the ankle injuries he played through in the postseason, I don't think he plays all those games if it's the regular season. Sometimes I think it's like hard nose, it's the quarterback, got to play. Sometimes it wouldn't hurt you to take a day. That's all.
Well, we know the Broncos are still the Broncos. Well, the Raiders could show flashes, man. I mean, that's a pesky little team.
That's Gardner Minshew, though, right? He's good for a couple really strong performances when he goes to throw back to his college days, and it happened to the Ravens. You hope it just doesn't happen against you. And to his credit, that was a game that now sets him up to maybe get to 2-1. The Raiders get the Panthers, who are going to be a little more challenging because Andy Dalton's a quarterback, but that's relative. In the grand scheme of things. I think the Raiders are going to get to 2-1.
What do you think about Adam Thielen when he had different choices? You heard the Chiefs were in on that deal.
He's going to have a huge game on Sunday.
Obviously, he got money to go to Carolina, but he wants to win. I mean, that was part of it. He thought Carolina could actually win before he
was active. I was interested in him midseason last year. I'm less interested now. I like their wide receiver unit better than I did a year ago. But they've still got, that's based on the idea that I think maybe later in the season Hollywood's going to come back. I feel like I'm waiting for an updated time. I said maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm still waiting an updated timeline on Pacheco, too. It seemed like the original report was
6 to 12 weeks,
and then most recently it was 6 to 8, and Andy's always so careful with those injuries that if they're winning, it'll be long past that. If they're losing, maybe. Yeah, maybe he speeds the timeline up, but I don't know.
Fibula goes down near the ankle. It's tough, man.
I think it's at least 10 weeks.
So how do you see the running backs playing out Sunday then? Carson Steele is the starter. We know that. He had 7 touches as a backup last week.
I think a heavy dose of Carson Steele. I think Samaje Perine on a lot of third downs is the direction that they go. Eventually, I could see Kareem Hunt, being that him and Carson Steele going back and forth as far as the most carries. I think Perine definitely comes in as a third down back. They trust him back there. The pass protection is still good, and we know he can catch, although that first game, he thought he should have had that 34-yarder that would have been a touchdown. But Perine's good. We're talking about the guy that set the NCAA record for single-season rushing yards. It was a long time ago, but he can run.
I more of a receiving guy at this point. We were looking it up last year with the Broncos. He had like one game with seven carries. The rest were three, four, five carries.
Third down, man. Third down back.
So that means I think Steele's getting 11 plus carries, and I think Keontae Ingram gets like two carries in the game or something like that.
He will, and they'll do a couple of Xavier Worthy, you know, some jet sweeps.
Absolutely.
Maybe some Cole Hardman in there too. They'll find a way to supplant, you know, carries with some of the wide receivers, the indoor shorter passes, the tight ends.
That's hard not. Binkley, Carson Steele seems like a very much you guy.
Oh, totally.
That feels like a Jay Binkley
because
type
he went
of player.
To the Mac 2 years
small,
ago. Or?
Small school Mac guy.
With
has
UCLA.
An alligator. Runs
runs
hard. He's always like leaping over people. Kind of feels like he's almost running recklessly in a lot of ways, right? Like a Tasmanian devil, like out of control almost.
Learn to hold
that
football a little bit tighter because I do like that. Andy Reid will put you right back in there like he did.
He will the first time though.
The one thing I liked about Carson Steele,
eventually he'll LeSean McCoy your ass if you can't hold on to the ball.
It's third and one, fourth and one. Can you pick up that yard? Because you know we all give credit for Isaiah Pacheco being such a hard runner, but yet. When it comes, you know, to third and one or fourth and one, you don't see
sometimes
that as
you gotta
much.
Be slippery.
You see that more on a third and three, stuff like that. But Carson Steele seems to be that guy. It looks very hard to tackle behind the line of scrimmage. So I think that could be one of your answers on short yardage.
Sometimes we think these like big-bodied guys are the guys on the one-yard line. I think sometimes it's the guys who are just slippery enough to find that like small crease.
Like Marcus Allen?
The guys who just like almost turn their body sideways and then fall
into the
end zone.
That was 100% Marcus Allen.
Like I think sometimes we like... like it must be Derrick Henry must be the best red zone guy, and he's very good, obviously. But it's just, it doesn't work as simple as Pacheco runs like he's trying to run through a brick wall. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be good in the red zone, because then sometimes you have to wait for the hole and then slide in and be careful. It's not always just what if I just run in the back of an offensive lineman and hope I get in.
But they're being creative because we obviously saw Leo Chanel in the backfield, you know, doing that, and we see a tackle eligible touchdown. I mean, you're starting to see some creativity on things if you don't have that full confidence to get that yard.
We got Jay Binkley hanging out with us here. It's the Fan Club on a Friday. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon. Drew Nixon with the fresh cut, the bleach blonde hair
show
now.
Show that again after break.
We'll get another shot of that. Pretty soon, I'm assuming we'll get some photos out on social media. I know if you're on Instagram, you could already see some of that. But we'll talk a little college football with Bink. All three locals in action. Big games for all three, frankly. But specifically two, I would say, more than the other. And we'll also get our final predictions for the Chiefs and Falcons on Sunday Night Football right here on 96.5 The Fan. We'll get to our game predictions for Sunday Night Football here on 96.5 The Fan coming up in about 10 minutes or so. We got Jay Binkley hanging out with us. It's the Fan Club Friday on the show. Video stream is up if you want a glimpse of Drew's bleach blonde hair, Mr. Joe Burrow.
Can we go to you real quick, Drew, on the video stream?
I've got the free shout up right now.
YouTube, Twitter, Facebook.
Bink says it looks awful.
Twitch. At the Fan 965.
Because he's hating.
That way you can
don't you think it looks bad?
I mean, I don't think it looks good. I think the cut looks really good.
I'll be honest.
And I think that the salon did a nice job dyeing it.
Oh, big time.
I think it's a great look for Drew? No, too pale.
I told Drew, if he was like in California and tan, it would fit a little bit better.
Yeah, let's go surf some waves, dude.
I just think he looks like an 80s villain. Karate movie, soccer movie, doesn't really matter. He just looks like a villain in an 80s movie.
I think I actually, like, from looking in the mirror in the bathroom, I was like, I think I actually could pull it off. I think I would need to honestly get it
talking
bleached.
Talking yourself into it.
I would almost need to get it bleached again, I think, where it's consistent all the way around. I think it'll be interesting, because from what I was told by Rye and her husband, when it starts to grow back, when the brown starts to go back and it looks like highlights, that's when it's really going to, they think it'll look really good, actually.
How long does it last?
Forever, until all the hair is gone.
Until I cut it.
Until all this hair grows away and you cut it away, it's there. So January, maybe?
I was going to say, based on the way Joe Burrow's hair has continued to grow, it could be December, January before I actually have a full head of brown.
I hope it gets lighter and lighter.
From the 816,
so actually.
Drew wanted his whiteout game so bad. Now he's going to get it in his hair. Mm.
I'd take a page from Vern and I and just cut it off.
Just shave it. Not yet. Too early. We'll be right back.
Hey, you know what? My wife likes it. That's I think it's matters. Too bad, so that's all that matters, man.
I told you, I think I said this earlier in the week
she
as well.
She wants you to get highlights, she said.
I think this is a good thing for you and the wife.
Although I heard you say you're going out to dinner tomorrow. Now, clearly you wouldn't do that during Oklahoma and Tennessee, would you?
Bink, it is her birthday, and I believe we're going to a spot where we'll be able to watch said games.
Oklahoma and Tennessee. You're not going at 6:30, are you, Drew?
Sorry?
You're not going at 6:30, are you?
Oh, no. It's going to be during the Utah-Oklahoma State game, I guess, more or less. Or maybe even earlier than that, actually.
Okay, let's talk.
Yeah. But again, it's my wife's birthday. Well,
I understand that,
college football doesn't matter, Bank.
Hey, man, you're married. That's great.
She's trying to stay married.
It's awesome. I'm so glad you're married, too.
Correct. Thank you.
Because seriously, man. He's just saying you'd get zero action right now.
You walk in with Drew, and you'd be like, oh.
Damn.
Like, why'd you bring your kid?
Why'd you bring your kid? All right.
You go to a college bar.
Thinking of colleges, all three locals, Bink, in action. Let's start with Missouri. SEC play opens up. They're at home in Columbia, 20.5-point favorites against Vandy. I was really impressed last week. Like, any questions I had still about the Tigers, I thought were answered because Boston College punched them in the mouth early, and by halftime, the Tigers were back in front. I thought that was a huge thing for them to pull that off. They did. They're number 7 in the country. They're going to take on a bad Vandy team. I think it's going to be ugly on Saturday afternoon.
They are. It's a 2-1 Vandy team. The one thing Vandy has going for them, I don't know, you probably didn't follow any New Mexico State last year. I bet Drew did.
But Jerry Kill.
Diego Pavi is their quarterback. He's actually like a decent quarterback that can do some things with Vanderbilt. It's not going to beat Missouri. Missouri, it was great competition. Boston College is pretty good. Bill O'Brien runs that thing in a good way. And Thomas Castellanos, their quarterback, very good. And for Missouri to come back in that game, it showed a lot of, you know, mental toughness. Now, they gave up points finally because they had gone, you know, 2 straight games. They're trying to replace Blake Baker, the defensive coordinator, left for LSU last year. So you always kind of wonder about bringing a new coordinator. But, man, their offensive pieces. You know, every receiver's back. Brent Norfleet's back at tight end.
Yeah.
Those running backs in Noel and Marcus Carroll, those transfers, hitting the transfer portal. Something Dabo should learn, hitting the transfer portal and replenishing your running backs.
I think that Missouri's just got a long history of underperforming right when you start counting on them. You're like, here they go. And to this point in the early part of the season, been the opposite. I thought it'd been easy to let that, Pink, I'm with you. I think it'd been easy to let that Boston College game get away from you because you got punched in the mouth a little, and it's like, you've blown it because you're Missouri. And I understand that every kid, like the Army, is like, current Missouri football players don't know who blew it in the 90s or whatever. And there's truth to that. But it just feels like sometimes a university is cursed. It's just like, it's always going to get them anyway.
Well, that's why I said, I mean, I was sold more on Missouri than ever based off of what happened. The fact that by halftime, they already regained the lead.
Yep. Came right back, and that was just the better team. You're watching this. Missouri's the better team. When they were down, it's like, what are they doing? Because Missouri's the better team.
Now, what about the Kent State Wildcats? They get a really nice win last Friday in Manhattan. It wasn't
tough
close.
Travel week.
But now they go all the way out west to beautiful Provo, Utah. Late game, 9:30 start time. Altitude, late, all of that. This game back in June, Bink, had the Wildcats as a 13-point favorite. Fast forward to actual game week, they're 6.5, 7-point favorite, depending on the book.
It's 3-0 BYU team. It's much different. K-State, got to give him credit. I know that when they played Darian Minza, the redshirt freshman quarterback, Tulane, he lit him up in secondary. So you're worried, like, what's Arizona with Tedder Roll and McMillan? And Fafita, the quarterback, going to do to Kansas State? And you see that first drive, it took them forever, but they did score. Arizona scored first against Kansas State, but they've only given up 10 total points in all three games.
I didn't realize how well their defense is playing.
Only 10 points in the postseason, second in the Big 12. They're getting better, and of course, they didn't have any preseason All Big 12 guys on the defense, but Mark Sigel on defense doing a great job. But Avery Johnson, to me, that was his best game. It just was. He just commanded. We waiting from that, had that commanding presence because he's already lightning fast. We know that. But what he does on the ground, and can he complete the passes? I'll tell you this much. If K-State has a lead on you, they're going to suffocate you. When they have DJ Giddens back there and sprinkling some Dylan Edwards and then Avery Johnson running, they're going to be picking up some serious first
rounds. They should give it to Dylan Edwards more.
He's got a touchdown in every game. Now, this last one was a punt return, but Dylan Edwards has a touchdown in every game.
62 punt and kick returns they have since 05. That is insane.
I know that this is college, so it kind of works. Like, why not just give it to him more? Give it to Giddens really good, but when I watch Dylan Edwards, I'm like, no, he should have it more. Like, not more than Giddens, but more.
Well, probably
like
more.
Like, 5 to 7 times
Giddens
more.
Giddens is easily a top 5 running back, I think, coming out of the draft this year. He's that good.
They're running for, like, 230 yards a game.
Well, that's their offense.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Kansas.
They're at West Virginia tomorrow, 11 a.m. kickoff. They're 2.5-point favorites. We know the story so far. I thought it was a bad loss at Illinois. It was even worse at home against UNLV. I wanted confirmation on Friday if Jalen Daniels just had a bad game or this is who he is now. This is who he is now, Bink. Poor decision-making coupled with bad play calling equates to a bad football team. I don't think they're well-coached right now. And they have a game tomorrow, to me, that will decide whether or not they still salvage six wins or this is going to be ugly, ugly, and we're going to be talking about a Jayhawk team winning 4 or 5.
Yeah, and just bank it on Jalen Daniels. You know, he's never really put that full season together, but that potential a little bit. Missing offensive coordinator that went to Penn State, Carter Lincoln. That is huge. I mean, because this guy was with Lance Leipold in the Wisconsin Whitewater, in Buffalo, goes to Kansas. That's made a huge difference. And I've been a little bit surprised with that defense, too, because Melo Dotson and Kobe Bryant is the best tandem of cornerbacks in the Big 12. And Devin Neal is certainly right there as one of the top running backs in the Big 12, because Ellie Gordon at Oklahoma State didn't play in like he used to do. But very surprised with the coaching and Jalen Daniels with the 6 interceptions so far this season.
Terrible. I mean, my preseason take on Kansas, which is if you tell me Jalen Daniels plays every game, I'll pretty much guarantee you 9 or 10 wins for them because they seemed locked into if Jalen Daniels played, then they look kind of unstoppable. He stinks, Bink. I understand they lost their offensive coordinator, but that doesn't excuse this level of play.
No, it doesn't.
Is some of it knocking off the injury rust? What is it, you know?
It's the head coaching, too, that it comes down to. And West Virginia's a desperate team, too. This was a team that kind of like maybe a dark horse in the Big 12. They finished strong last year. Neil Brown probably not going to keep his job with this 1-2 start he's got at West Virginia.
No, yeah. I mean, I guess, I don't know. They got to go
but
find
they're just desperate as Kansas is.
Yes.
They are.
But Kansas they can't. Kansas's risk is so much greater than almost any other team in college football because they were a laughingstock for a decade. They can't really afford to take too many big slides back because they're trying to build a new stadium. They're trying to stay relevant. They can't. Like, I think they have to be very careful to, not accidentally slide right back into the pit. And I don't think that they're there yet, and I think that that's far too soon, but that's always going to be their risk.
Yeah, and that's what we brought up earlier in the week. Cody alluded to a little bit, but there's massive long-term ramifications because we know the stadium, half of it will be done next August, but they still don't have a timeline on the next phase. And this was one of our concerns 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, I guess, when we were up at camp and they announced the plans. Like, okay, the renderings are one thing, but they hadn't set a target date for the second or third phase to begin. That was a red flag at the time. And then now, if you're going to lose fan support because of this season, the games at Arrowhead are going to be empty, man. They were already going to struggle to fill it.
All the financing's not there, is it?
I mean, that's not for exactly.
For phase two, no.
And that's the issue. If you don't have the fan support. And then Drew brought up something about Leipold, too.
Well, I was going to go to that. I'm sure you and I will talk about this a little bit more on Sunday, Bink. Okay. But do you think, because of mainly what Gold's talking about, Jalen Daniels was always going to be gone. Devin Neal was always going to be gone. So was Kobe. So were Melo. Everybody like that. Do you think if Florida reaches out to Leipold, because that's a name that has come up, if they do get rid of Billy Napier, do those jobs become more appealing, or any job really, because of the situation that Gold's mentioning with the stadium stuff where you need to recruit to go to a spot? You're recruiting for the program, but also you need to be able to showcase a stadium that looks full, that is built. They've got the new facilities, but does that impact any sort of decision-making maybe that Lance Leipold does after this season?
Well, I assume a little bit, but his personality is he's not a job hopper. I know that he did, he spent 6 years winning national
titles. Yeah, he's already turned down 2 jobs. Yeah, he's got an extension.
Right. You know what I'm saying? So, naturally, I would think, yeah, he would be a guy that would go take that job in Florida if they came calling. But the mere fact, he's one of these guys that kind of settles in and likes to build his program. So he's just kind of a different dude in that respect.
I do feel like Drinkwitz is a guy that if Missouri has a really good season, Bink, that if Florida has that job open, we've seen guys go within conference. I know Lane Kiffin would be a popular choice, but yep. I wonder if they'd go after Drink.
Look, we all think Leipold, and we know he's a good coach. Right now, they look like a poorly coached team, though. And if they finish with 4 wins, Florida's
right.
not calling them.
You're right.
you know
right.
what I mean? Like,
right.
if it's a 4-win season, you think the alumni and fan base in Florida is going to get excited about that hire?
Those coaches to go away.
But also, the exciting hire is not always the right hire either.
I agree.
So screw your alumni base. Leipold, they were not like over the moon about Leipold at Kansas, and even less so probably at K-State.
The problem is
for the most recent climate
donors
hire.
Are you need them for nil now. For these donors, to push them away because these schools need donors more than ever now. Because not only you have to pay the buyout, not only you have to go to them once again to get money for the new coach, now you need money from them for name, image, and likeness. Yeah, so now you're hitting those donors. I understand what you're saying. Donors shouldn't run a program, but these schools rely on them more than ever now.
They've always, you know, like they've always run
that
the
money
programs.
Gold
let's
since
be honest.
Kansas, I mean.
Yeah. It's just, tomorrow's a big, I thought last Friday was a big swing game for their entire season. But this one is now like, we're obviously done talking about, I know they had, this is their first conference game. So yes, technically nothing has changed for their path, but with the way they've played, I mean, this game tomorrow against West Virginia will dictate whether or not they're, to me, a bowl team or not. If they win tomorrow, I still think they'll get to bowl eligibility and all
I think
that.
Bean was better than we thought he was last year. I mean, he is on the practice squad of the Colts still. So, I mean,
the play calling thing is just massive.
But
massive
he loss. Played well for him.
Just a massive loss. All right, let's get back to the Chiefs, though. Sunday, pregame coverage starts at 4 right here on 96.5. The Fan, Mitch Holthus, Dan Israel, Josh Klingler, Dane and Hughes, all part of the broadcast crew. So, Chiefs are 3-point favorites. The line went down. I was surprised to see that. Was 3.5
in a row.
Was 3.5 down to 3. What's just your vibe on this game? We already talked about the left tackle and all that. For me, it's Spags is going to get after Kirk Cousins, and he is the most statuesque quarterback they're going to face all year, right?
He is. And did you notice he didn't take shotgun? He was under center. Like that whole last game, the Falcons did. Yeah. He's under center, and that you'd slick your chops if you're on the defense. Now, will you be in shotgun more? I was talking about this last night with JC and Mitch. Are you going to see more shotgun because you didn't see it? I mean, if
you're fans in Atlanta wanted him under center more because in week one he was in the pistol, and they're like, "This just shows his Achilles is not right."
Yeah, but still, though, under center, then he's got to step back.
Well, it's going to be a 2 to 3+ sack game for the Chiefs.
I will say this though, I love their running backs with Bijan and Tyler Algier. I mean, it's just two different style of backs, but Bijan's a special player. That's the one part that concerns me. Once they get a little bit of space, they can do some damage. You know,
it's like most good running teams. The Falcons have not looked scary because they've never been ahead. Ahead, that team scares me far more. When they can really let Bijan and Algier go, they got like 2 scores on you. I could see why they'd be a huge pain in the ass.
And it's Arthur Blank putting himself in the Hall of Fame. So he's going to have the Arthur Blank, you know, cup for everybody to get free drinks out of. So
what's your prediction? Factor. What's the score? How's
it
going to go out?
Kansas City. I really want to see him put somebody away. Just put the foot on the gas. We keep saying it. It doesn't happen every week. I'm going to go 27-17 Chiefs.
I had him at 27-24 when I had talked to Kramer earlier this week for our predictions video. I'll stick with that for now. I think it might come down scoring-wise a little bit, where maybe it is a little bit lower scoring, but I still think both these teams can score.
Chiefs are better. Mahomes is 10-0 in domes, 3-1 in retro field. So
there it is, Cody. I told you. Cody was about to give us the dome stats.
And he said, do not take that from Jay Bakel.
I said, Bakel will have that for us.
Yeah, don't take my dome stat,
but
man.
But every quarterback on the planet scores more inside and scores more in neutral weather conditions. So I'm just going to assume that Mahomes will do the same.
I tease this guy all the time. Sean Barber.
Oh, like really?
He's actually worse at domes than
he was outside. Has come up before.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, he'll send us a text now. much like Cody said, we did give out our official predictions on videos on our social channels right now. 24-17. I still feel good about that score because I'm not sold that one drive we saw from Atlanta that suddenly Kirk Cousins and the offense is just loose and opened up. The Chiefs' challenge is going to be Bijan Robinson more than anything else in that entire offense. I'm not worried about Drake London. They've done great against wide receivers. Kyle Pitts can get 90 yards receiving. I'm good. It's whether or not Kyle Pitts has 90 and then Robinson has 70 on the ground and 70 through the air. And there's some touchdowns involved. I think it's lower scoring, 24-17. I think the Chiefs are going to get after Kirk Cousins. He gets the ball out quickly, but I just think they have not shown the ability to have an explosive offense yet in Atlanta under Kirk Cousins.
Can you have a deep pass like he did Tyreek Hill and Mahomes in that preseason game in Atlanta?
He's a non-mobile quarterback, and as it sits right now, Chris Jones and Turk Wharton rank as 2 of the top 10 interior pass rushers in the NFL right now. So, look, I know they're not getting as much pressure from the edge as they would like from Karlaftis and Dana, but they're still getting people up the middle. They're getting that against an immobile quarterback, well, then he's in trouble.
He's 36 years old, coming off Achilles. He has 1 postseason win. It's not exactly clutch.
You can send in your predictions, 913-586-7965. Drew, how do you see this playing out, Mr. Slim Shady?
Yeah, I think that this is going to be a lower scoring game. I forget what the over-under is. I don't know if you just mentioned
46
it
or 7?
I think we're going under. Chiefs 24, Falcons 13. I think the Chiefs do a really nice job of limiting what Kirk Cousins can do. And they get a couple field goals instead of touchdowns, and the Chiefs win a comfortable game by double digits.
Okay.
Now, here's something kind of note. Tom Pelissero reports that Justin Herbert, the high ankle sprain, his status for Sunday still to be determined.
It's Easton
high
ankle Stick but against Justin away. Fields, man. That's a matchup.
Steelers going to be 3-0.
A fellow Blondie.
Honestly, if you're the Chargers.
It's very good, but that offense sucks.
If you're the Chargers, the Chiefs game is far more important. Why would you risk Justin Herbert against the Steelers this week?
This isn't even the plantar fasciitis. This is a separate injury. This is a separate injury.
Same foot.
High ankle sprain. We know this with Mahomes. This is going to not clear up in 1 week.
Nope.
So that's why I agree with you. Like, they maybe just say, screw it. We'll rest them. We think we can be in a low. It's going to be a low scoring. We don't have to. If you're the Chargers, you're viewing it as, hey, we're not going to have to score a ton of points to beat the Steelers. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think the Steelers have scored 28 points either. So this is going to be an ugly.
It's a 20.
Yeah, Boswell and then whoever the hell the kicker is there in San Diego these days or LA these days. But thanks for coming in studio, Bing.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. We'll be listening during pregame. You'll do your college football segment as well. Plus, you're on at 10 a.m. on Sunday, right?
Yeah, 10 a.m. Okay. to noon. And you know what? Like last week, the 1 point wins are 1 point wins. People were criticizing Georgia, but you got to win. If you find a way to win, those are good teams. This is what they do.
Hope everybody has a great weekend. We're back out on a Monday. We'll see if the Royals can calm everybody down a little bit. Huge three-game start tonight right here on 96.5 The Fan. The Drive coming up next.